Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and call the Senate Committee on Judiciary to order. There's a couple of changes on our agenda. We had intended to carry over a bill that was not properly posted. I believe that was House Bill 2236. We listed 2238, which also did not get work, but we had some additional work and was not intended for that one to be carried over. Because the other one was not properly posted, we will repost it for our work session next week. And 2238, we will not be doing any work on it today because it already has a need for, let's say, some additional information for the committee to act on. Because of that, we are going to go ahead and start with our second bill that's on the agenda. This is a public hearing, so I'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 516 in council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 516 authorizes the Department of Human Services to register physicians as agents under the Oregon Tort Claims Act to the extent the physician is providing services under Medicare or Medicaid. There is no amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. Senator Morissette's here. And then I have three individuals that are in favor, three that are against, and one that's neutral. So, Bill, if you want to go first, and then we'll bring up the proponents after that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for hearing this bill. And members of the committee, Senator Bill Morissette, Senate District 6. The bill is not in complete form yet. There were things that were left out of it that I intended to have included, and my major concern is in relation to the handout that I just gave you regarding the Department of Consumer and Business Services on Rural Health Medical Professional Liability Reinsurance. That's a program that we instituted in 05 and again in 07, and it has a sunset and will go away in January 1st, 2011. That provides assistance to rural physicians who, first of all, deal with Medicare, Medicaid. That's one of the conditions. They generally are OBGYNs, family practitioners, who will operate in rural Oregon, will practice in rural Oregon, and also deliver babies. It's a very important program. We put about $40 million into it, $40 million over a four-year period. This latest amount was $25 million that will expire in 2011. We're going to have to find some replacement for that program, and what my motivation was in this bill basically was to include those particular practitioners, and some of them are nurse practitioners, by the way, in the cap at OHSU. So it would be a fairly limited number of physicians who work in rural Oregon. Now, I do attend the Rural Health Conference every year, and I am familiar with the physician and her spouse who works in Pendleton, who came to Oregon from Tennessee because of this program, and who told me they would promptly leave the state when this program goes away, if it goes away. The larger problem is, I think, cost. We're trying to contain cost drivers, trying to lower the cost of health care in our health care reform effort. We're looking at a variety of programs. We're dealing with hospitals. We're dealing with location of hospitals, clinics, and so on. And certainly the medical malpractice is identified by many as a cost driver. We're one of 11 states that does not have a cap. So that's the motivation. Now, the program, I just received this recently in the last week. We're going to have a report in my committee shortly about the program and the success of the program currently, what we have in mind to replace or supplement the medical malpractice for these particular people. And we're going to do all of that, and I would hope that this particular topic could be included in that discussion. I would like to have the people who are for and against tort caps and reform and so on participate and see if this is a viable tool to replace the subsidy that we currently have. So basically, that's why I introduced this bill. The scope is not limited in the bill, but if you are interested at all in pursuing this, I would do some amendments. And I understand this is not something that would pass this session. I'm not even asking that. I'm looking for perhaps a work group that could include tort reform as one of the options in finding getting help for those who really need it to continue their practice. Doctors, again, you will probably hear later, are people who are in medical school are choosing not to get into primary care. They're choosing specialties. There are problems with the repayment rates for Medicare, Medicaid. I get phone calls from people who can't find a Medicare doctor, and the solution to that is supplemental insurance, which many of the IPAs have, that makes Medicare available to elderly people. But we do have some problems that need to be addressed, and this is what I offer is a partial solution. So with that, I will end.
Questions? All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And what I would ask, that if whatever you have in the sense of your thoughts as to amendments and all that, you should probably at least have your LA put them together. You don't need to go through the LC to have them drafted, as you said. And as I mentioned, I will be entertaining a work group that will be occurring during the interim, looking at tort reform. And so we'll be more than glad to take those various things in consideration, as long as we have everyone coming in with not preconceived agendas.
Good. Well, that really is my goal, is to get involved in a work group to find some solutions. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right. We have those who want to be testifying today. I'm going to call up a panel, Peter Bernardo, Jim Lace, and Jonathan, I'm assuming Bales or Barnes?
Brains.
Brains?
Or
Eames.
Eames. I thought it was a B. Sorry.
Can't read any of our writing.
Actually, it's a prescription for drugs, so.
First qualification is a doc, just like attorneys, you know, can't read. They're writing.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is John Leans. I'm here with Backwest Communications on behalf of Jefferson County Independent
Physicians Association, Mid Valley Independent Physicians Association, and COHO, Coalition for Healthy Oregon. Thank you for agreeing to hear this bill, and thank you to Senator Morissette for bringing this subject up. And as you can see by his testimony, this presents an excellent opportunity to talk about something that's very important as we focus during this legislative session on health care reform, which is a significant problem. This is a piece of that puzzle. And solving this piece of that puzzle is going to be important to keeping healthcare costs down. And also, thank you for convening a work group in the interim. That's very important, and we really appreciate that as well. As we look at tort reform and other and elements of tort reform in context with healthcare reform, we know that costs are driven by defensive medicine. A recent study that came out from Massachusetts Medical Association found that up to 15% of healthcare costs are attributable to defensive medicine. And as we look at opportunities to fix this problem, the Oregon Health Plan and what this bill does is give doctors who are serving Oregon Health Plan patients, Medicare and Medicaid, the opportunity to fall under the Oregon State Tort Claims Act. We find fewer and fewer doctors that are actually serving this low-income population. And what we're worried about is that if we can continue down the path of low reimbursement rates and not encouraging doctors to come into the state, we're going to have a serious access problem. And that's what we've already found is the shortage of doctors, primarily primary care doctors, not only in the Portland area but all over the regions of the state. We've found a serious access problem that is not being solved and is getting worse as we speak. So we've brought two doctors here today, Dr. Lace and Dr. Bernardo, to talk about their experiences and what they've found, but also to talk about tort reform and healthcare in general in context of this bill. But I do want to emphasize, thank you very much for listening to this. This is a very important issue, and I hope we can move forward not only this legislative session, but in future legislative sessions. Thank you.
Okay. I just want to put some parameters on our discussion today.
Sure.
And this is for everyone that's testifying. We're looking at this bill that's before us, so what I'm really wanting to focus on is how it pertains to the Oregon Tort Claim Act, as well as the Medicare and Medicaid. Again, we are going to have a much broader discussion on tort reform, and I have other business today, so we're not going to be able to take up the full time talking about tort reform. As most of you know, I've sat on that committee during the interim report. We weren't able to get there, and my commitment, again, is to give it another shot. It's been about 3 years or 4 years since we've tried. Hopefully, we'll have a different outcome. Thank you.
Good morning. You want to flip a coin?
Senator Brzezanski and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. James Lace. I'm a pediatrician here in Salem, and I'm also chairman of the Oregon Medical Association Legislative Committee. And I'm here to testify in support of 516. We've already heard from Senator Morissette an issue with Medicare. There's three things that I've learned over the years, and I'm a pediatrician, of course, but one thing is don't get sick. Number two is don't get old and don't go on Medicare just because our system's not working real well right now. And as we address the growing crisis of access, the growing crisis of shortage, we actually have a shortage depending upon where you are in the state, and if you want to try to access the system, it is very difficult at times. And anything we can do to improve that, whether it's going to be liability reform, payment restructures, all these things are very, very important, and this is going to be one part of the puzzle. Our abilities to attract new physicians to the state compared to going to California or some of these other states that have caps on liability is hampered, quite honestly, because of the payment structures. To give you an idea, my malpractice premium now is about $15,000 a year, which doesn't sound like that much, but it used to be $600, and so that's changed a lot. When we lost our cap on pain and suffering with the Lakin decision in 99, that's when everything changed, and our local liability carrier didn't go out of business, but they sold out to a bigger group in California. So we are very interested in approaching this, very interested in being part of a work group that comes out of this, and that somehow if we can put some parameters around the system so that we have predictable premiums and that we have the ability to attract physicians to come to the state, be in primary care, be whatever, it's extremely important. The OMA in the past has proposed things like the health court, expert witness qualifications. These are not part of the current bill. We won't take up any time discussing those, but we do want to make sure that there are alternatives that can be looked at, shorter or easier alternatives, rather than just a global restructuring of the whole system. We want to reaffirm that the OMA is very committed to working on this. This is near and dear to our heart. Anything we can do to improve access to care in the state for our patients, especially Medicaid, Medicare patients, is huge. You've heard him talk a little bit about access issues. In Salem, we have four clinics, basically, that take Medicaid patients. That's it. And any substantial number. Our pediatric office is way off the deep end. We're at 50% Medicaid right now. It's a very, very big issue to us, and it really hampers us in terms of recruiting people. We tell people, listen, you can get paid a lot more if you go work for somebody else. You're going to come work for us. You're going to be paid differently. But, you know, we're doing okay. We're not whining, but that's part of the whole, you know, access issue. And so anything we can do to reform that is greatly appreciated.
Sure. Doctor.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, committee. I'm Peter Bernardo, for the record. I'm a general surgeon here in Salem. I am president-elect of the Oregon Medical Association, and I was chairman and chief sponsor of the Measure 35 campaign back in 2004, as you recall, to bring back the cap on non-economic damages in medical liability cases. I appreciate the chance to speak today, and I would love to spend all day talking about tort reform, you're right, but I will limit my remarks to this bill and how it affects our practice. I will comment, my liability insurance this year was $42,000. That's three times what it was 10 years ago before we lost our cap. I sat down and thought about that the other day. I'm a general surgeon. Really, I'm part of the primary care spectrum. So if you go to most small communities in this state, if the general surgeon is the person you call in the middle of the night when you have a problem for abdominal pain, major injury, we kind of do a lot of things. We see patients from 6 months of age to 96 years of age. And we're an integral part of the healthcare system. I see patients in my office a couple days a week, 20, 25 patients on Mondays and Thursdays. New patients for consultation, patients in follow-up after surgery, patients with recurring medical problems, cancer follow-up. Somewhere about the middle of the afternoon on Monday, I'm done paying for my liability insurance every week. All right, $800 or so. We live in a state, half of 55% of my practice is Medicare, Medicaid, and uninsured. And those office visits, those consultations, don't pay a lot of money. And every Monday, I'm working for my liability insurance. That's a little disheartening. Here in Salem, the liability issue translates into an access to care issue for Medicaid, for Medicare patients. I've been in practice for 17 years here in Salem, in the Mid-Valley. We have no more general surgeons in town than we had when I came to town in 1992. And our population here locally is up 30%. That means that my colleagues are working harder than they want to work, and they have to say no once in a while, not because they don't want to see patients, but because there just aren't enough hours in the day. This access to care, the liability issue, translates into difficulty in recruiting physicians to our state. As a state, we do not produce enough physicians on an annual basis to meet our needs. As a nation, we do not produce enough physicians to meet our needs. We have a physician shortage in all specialties, particularly in primary care. We are in competition as a state for those physicians. And as much as I love Oregon, I grew up here. I'm kindergarten through MD in the public school system. This is my home. But there aren't a lot of folks who know about this. And what they see is our unemployment rate, our uninsurance rate, our Medicaid and Medicare reimbursements, which are the lowest in the nation. And they know they could go someplace else that they probably would find equally attractive and make more money and work in a better economic environment, work in a better liability environment. It's not just the cost of our liability insurance. It's the effect it has, the environment has on how you practice. So access to care is a huge issue, not just with the shortage of physicians, but what physicians do on a daily basis here, because they're worried about patients, they're worried about whether they might get sued. We think we know, that the uninsured, the Oregon Health Plan patients delay their care, they come late to care often, and they're high-risk patients. And physicians often will look at those patients and say, you know, you might be able to get your care at a better facility, a bigger facility in a bigger city, and maybe I shouldn't do your operation this week. Maybe I shouldn't provide your cancer care this week. And that's a thought that occurs to all of us. The orthopedic surgeons here in town don't do back surgery anymore, and it's because of the liability crisis. They can drop their premiums by 30% by cutting out back surgery, and they get a patient population out of their office that is challenging, is occasionally litigious. So these are the decisions we make every day, not just because we don't have enough doctors, but because the doctors who are here have changed their practice parameters. We talk about Oregon Health Plan. We talk about low reimbursement. Here we are looking at trying to insure more patients in this state, perhaps adding 175,000 new OHP patients to our rolls
That's an exciting prospect for those of us who see the uninsured. We'd like them to get care. We'd like them to have access to care. But we spend a lot of money. And the other facet of liability and the liability environment is this idea of defensive medicine that we've talked about. And the estimates are hard to pin down, but people look at a lot of studies and say 5, 10, 15% of our healthcare costs are from defensive medicine practices. The studies on why physicians do what they do are very clear cut. You have a patient in your office, you're worried about them, you're worried about getting sued, you know what practice parameters are, guidelines, best standards, you know what you want to do, but you're worried. And you know that you're on the hook financially, emotionally. No one wants to get sued, believe me, physicians. It's a devastating prospect. And so why wouldn't you order that extra CAT scan or the extra blood test or recommend a biopsy when maybe observation would be better? And again, these are the decisions we make every day, and we make them in patient populations that we feel are at risk. If we had a better liability environment, if we had a better system, we might be able to practice closer to the guidelines that we all know exist. And maybe save some money to the system in the long term. So we are supportive of this bill. We are supportive of any liability and tort reform. And certainly as a member of the Oregon Medical Association, as a member of Mid-Valley IPA here in town, we're happy to participate in any process. Because in the long term, it's what's right for our patients and for the system.
Great. Thank you. Questions, comments? Senator Wissett.
Thank you, Senator. Dr. Bernardo, as you may know, I represent 5 rural counties. We have a higher mix of Medicare, Medicaid in those rural counties, largely due to the cost of living situations. Also, rather a higher percentage of general practitioners because, you know, in a small town, you don't have one of each. You have one, period, often. The number one reason for not coming to Oregon or not staying in Oregon is articulated as being alleged that the liability environment, and the second is low Medicaid, Medicare reimbursements. And so and in Klamath Falls, we have nearly 50 less physicians than we need, according to the U.S. Population estimates, just in that one town. So if Senate Bill 516 were to pass, how much would that reduce, do you believe, your liability insurance premiums and your exposure, and also for as a general if you were a general practitioner in rural Oregon, what would it do for you?
I think it's difficult for me to estimate what the benefit will be to my premiums. I think on a day-to-day basis, here in Salem, I think the specialists work very hard to see our Oregon Health Plan patients and our Medicaid patients. Marion Polk County Health Plan is a good plan. We work very hard to manage our patients. We know that because we are part of that system that our reimbursements are okay. The idea that if I saw an Oregon Health Plan patient that somewhere on the balance sheet would be a little less money off of my liability insurance would be helpful to me. I might not have greater reimbursement for seeing that patient, but on my balance, on my debit side, I'll be able to take that off. To know, perhaps the peace of mind, that if I am sued, if I do lose a liability suit, that I'm not going to be on the hook for the amounts over my coverage because I'm covered by the Tort Claims, State Tort Claims Act. That peace of mind is, as they say in the commercials, priceless and very difficult to quantify.
Thank you. Any other questions? I do have a couple myself. And I guess first, regarding the what attempts have been made to try to get the federal increase on reimbursements? I mean, is there a concerted effort by OMA or the region to try to get those redone? And where are we at?
At the Medicare level, yes, every year. The financing for Medicare financing is an incredibly convoluted process, and I think you need to make sure that you recognize that hospitals and physicians are financed through completely separate pools. So Medicare Part A is hospitals. Medicare Part B is physician services. Medicare Part B is a system which is regulated with something called the sustainable growth rate. And so every year they calculate just how much money they think the system should increase and divide it by the amount of services being given. And that gives you some percentage by which there should be an increase or decrease in physician fees. That SGR is actually a mess as computations go, and every year for the last 5 years, the number has been a negative number. This last year, we were facing a 20% cut in our physician reimbursement rates. And so every year in November, the Congress sits down and they hammer out a bill and they give us either no raise or they give us a 1% raise. But the pot actually stays the same, so all they're doing is moving around the reimbursement, but adjusting the numbers so the net gain is pretty much zero. Oregon, as a very efficient state with low reimbursements, is one of many, mostly in the West, that have banded together to try to get change. We don't have a lot of pull in the congressional level when you consider that the states with more congressmen get better reimbursements for New York City.
Okay, thank you. And let's see, the other, I guess, question, when I look at Senate Bill 516, I understand it's a general written bill. It doesn't go into a lot of specifics. And so part of it, what I'm hearing is that, what I'd like to know is your take on if this bill came through and its intended purpose was to give relief on your liability for seeing these Medicare or Medicaid patients, do you also think that that would extend to your non-Medicare Medicaid patients?
I believe the bill as written doesn't cover those commercial patients, and so you'd be seeing a mix on a day-to-day of folks who may be covered under this bill, and hence you'd be under the State Tort Claims Act, and others who would be not covered, and so you'd still have your private, you still have your commercial insurance.
Any other questions, comments? Gentlemen, thank you very much. All right, our next panel is going to include Bob Junduff, Richard Lane, Rick Bennett.
Members of the committee, Chair Przanski. My name is Richard Lane. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Trial Lawyers Association and here to oppose Senate Bill 516 as drafted. I have listened to Senator Morissette's remarks. I'd note for the committee that I participated with then Chair Representative Max Williams in 2003 when the germination of what became the Rural Health Insurance Relief Bill ultimately came into being. Quite a bit of the discussions about how that would work, where it would apply, what parts of the state and what physicians it would reach to. So I'm very familiar with that and I understand the problem with the sunset. We've also heard quite a few comments this morning about caps, damages. I'm not going to spend, I'll respond to questions. I just say for the record that I would disagree with many of the assertions that it either has any effect on reimbursement rates, physicians practicing in particular areas of the state, or insurance premiums. And I just, as I say, I'd respond to questions, but I'd leave it for another day. Turning to the bill itself as drafted, my comments were directed exactly there. 516 as drafted is discriminatory. It picks a certain section of the population, those with low income, those that have been declared to have some disability, and focuses on taking away their rights and no one else's. Secondly, the Oregon Tort Claims Act does apply to agents, but an agent is just not a label. Many cases have said you can label whatever you want an agent. That does not end the discussion. The cases have focused on the amount of control that is exercised over the so-called agent. And merely putting a list of physicians together and then declaring that they're agents of the state for purposes of the Tort Claims Act would be inconsistent with Oregon law. The bill itself is drafted. Does not indicate one way or the other whether if your entire practice was devoted to caring for Medicare and Medicaid patients, you would be entitled to these protections, the limitations under the Tort Claims Act, or whether you just saw one patient in an otherwise busy, privately paid for insurance practice, you would be entitled to the so-called protections of the Oregon Tort Claims Act. Finally, as many of the members of this committee know, from their work on the Interim Oregon Tort Claims Task Force, there are certain costs associated with any changes or amendments to the Act. We heard quite a bit of testimony about those costs in connection with that work. Extending the Tort Claims Act to any more agents requires the state to cover that funding. So this is not a revenue-neutral solution to anything. As the committee members may be aware of, the state of Oregon, when it pays these benefits out to a certain recipient, is entitled to full reimbursement of those benefits paid in the event there's any recovery in a subsequent tort action. It's dollar one, it's statutory, they've got a great department, the third-party recovery department inside of the Department of Human Services that works with you through any litigation, keeps you updated on what their lien is, what their payments are, and expects prompt payment on any settlement or judgment. This would obviously limit their ability to recover those costs paid. Obviously, that creates a further negative fiscal impact to the state's ability to recover those benefits paid. We oppose 516 as it's drafted. I understand it may be a work in progress, and we'll work with this committee or Senator Morissette directly on any changes. Thank you very much.
Bob? Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee. My name is Bob Judendieff. I'm the director of Disability Rights Oregon. We're a nonprofit organization that provides legal services to people with disabilities across the state of Oregon. Each year we set priorities for our services in assisting people with disabilities to obtain adequate health care coverage and services. It's a perennial priority of our organization. I'd also note that I sit on the Health Services Commission, so I have some familiarity with our Medicaid program here in Oregon, that's why I'm here today. First of all, I'd like to thank Senator Morissette for bringing this issue before you. I know that he's very concerned, as are we, about access to medical care for people who are on the Medicaid, Medicare programs. Very serious problem in Oregon, and one that we want to be part of the solution, discussion, reaching a solution in that problem. However, we don't feel that this is the way to go, and basically because, as Mr. Lane just pointed out, it singles out a certain group of people who are, by their nature, vulnerable, and decides that the way to address the financial issues in the system are to move the risk of harm to them as opposed to someone else in the system. If a person has the misfortune to be injured as a result of malpractice, we believe that that person, just like any other person, should have the right to be compensated for their harm. And just because they happen to get their insurance through the Oregon Health Plan or through Medicare, that they should not be limited in being able to get adequate compensation for their injury. If they do not receive adequate compensation, of course, that means that whatever the cost of their care is has to come from them. By the nature of Medicaid, that means more likely that it's going to come from the state, and so there will be some cost shifting back. In the case of Medicaid, that being the Oregon Health Plan, that may end up to be sort of value neutral for the state. In the case of Medicare, that's different. And I just wanted to point out that, again, from our perspective, Medicare is an insurance program. People who become disabled when they're on Medicare, when they receive Social Security disability and Medicare for their health care, this isn't a poverty program. It's an insurance program, and it's an insurance program that's created by the government to give people Social Security. And the idea that somehow that when you go to work, you do what you're supposed to do, you pay your taxes, you pay your Social Security, but then you get injured as a result of malpractice, that you're not compensated fully for your injury, we feel is unfair and breaks the public trust. That's the basis of the Social Security program. For those reasons, we would oppose Senate Bill 516 as is written. But again, we want to be part of the solution in terms of finding a way to assure the people who are receiving Medicare and Medicaid can find medical care. Thank you.
Great, thank you. Rick?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. First, just a couple of comments related to AARP public policy. We certainly support a civil justice system that encourages fair settlements, improves access for people with small claims, and generally streamlines the judicial process, making it less costly and more effective for all parties. However, we also have public policy that regard to state legislatures that should not limit the amount of punitive damages or joint or several liability or create unreasonable limits on damage awards for pain and suffering. Also, the courts and juries should determine damage awards free from all forms of age bias. Because of those policies, we have certainly concerns related to Senate Bill 516. I sent the bill back to our national staff, policy and legal staff, to take a look at. I got a response from them late yesterday, and although it was rather lengthy in providing a history of the Oregon Tort Claims Act over the last 100 years and so forth, as attorneys will often do. Let me just make mention of one or two comments that they made in that analysis.
Does the Ruffles chapter get charged by the line?
You can't get away from it. But for they, I think one or two of the pertinent comments they made was, in fact, that as written, Senate Bill 516 is an excessive expansion of the immunity provisions in the Oregon Tort Claims Act. And also, they kind of curious that as it affects the state Medicaid, they believe it would force the agency, the state Medicaid agency, to basically take over as defendant for any physician who claims that they acted as an agent of the state Medicaid office. Obviously, if a doctor is truly a state employee or an agent, such as a physician in a community clinic, they're already covered. So I'll just leave it at that. This bill presents some real concerns for us. As an aside to your question, Mr. Chairman, related to Medicare reimbursement, last year AARP worked very closely with a number of physician organizations to set aside the scheduled reduction in Medicare reimbursement for doctors. And in fact, we were successful in that, and the legislation that was passed by Congress provides modest increases also for those physicians who participate, I think, in e-prescribing programs and quality improvement programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions, comments?
Yes, thank you, Senator Brzezinski. Actually, a question for Mr. Main. You suggested that Senate Bill 516 is discriminatory. I would wonder how you think it is, if you could explain how it's more discriminatory than Senate Bill 311. Senate Bill 311 allows or provides liability caps for on patients who are seen by OHSU physicians, but doesn't in private physicians, so it creates the same two classes of liability citizens, liability covered citizens. So why is it appropriate to provide liability protection to OHSU physicians that provide services to patients whose care is paid for with public funds, while it is not appropriate to provide liability protection to private practitioners who provide services to patients whose care is paid with public funds. I mean, I struggle with the, if one is discriminatory, why is not the other discriminatory, sir?
Certainly. Senator Whitsitt, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, as you may recall, the work that was done for Senate Bill 311 changed the amount of damages that would be recoverable against the state of Oregon or a local public body.
Yes, I understand that.
It had no impact on the liability of any individual physician practicing at OHSU. That was the holding inside of Clark versus OHSU that caused the committee to be formed, the task force to be formed in the first place. So even under the Bill 311, if enacted, the individual physician practicing at OHSU is still liable for the full extent of any damages. And that's why I think that this bill would then make the physician subject to the tort claims limitations, while the changes to Senate that were made in Senate Bill 311 do not affect any of the, does not cap any of the liability of physicians practicing at OHSU.
Yes, the state is required by statute, by rule, whatever, to indemnify those physicians for their liability, and I thought that was the entire purpose of Senate Bill 311, to cover that eventuality, because the, as I recall, the Supreme Court did not strike down the cap on the state because that was actually more generous than the issue was at the time the Constitution was written, because at the time the Constitution was written, a person couldn't sue the state at all. So the whole purpose of Senate Bill 311 was to cover the liability, put a liability cap on the employees of the state. So I'm struggling with your answer.
Senator Whitsitt, Chair Brzezinski, members of the committee, as you recall, the Supreme Court in the Clark decision said that the governmental entities, a true governmental entity, was not liable at all for any tort at the time that the Constitution was enacted. So it upheld the ability of the legislature to set reasonable caps for the protection of the state. It held the opposite with an individual that they could not be capped. Now, the effort by the task force and the framework inside of Senate Bill 311 is intended to correct the low limits that existed underneath the governmental liability. And the thinking is that the vast majority of torts that the state government is responsible to indemnify will be covered with inside those newly enacted or increased rates. However, I think all of the people that testified and the public members and many of the elected officials that sat on a committee recognized that constitutionally you could not limit the exposure of the individual physician at OHSU under any scenario under the Clark decision.
We need to visit about that.
Okay.
All right. Any other questions or comments? I do want to just follow up with Rick regarding the effort on Medicare office or on the Medicaid repayment. My understanding is the way this has been set up on the national level, they take multiple factors, geographics, cost of living, cost of doing business, etc. Can you express as to how this has been, approached to make changes? Because it seems to me, as we heard from the doctor panel, it's basically who has the most congressional delegates are the ones that are basically, bringing home the bacon and taking care of their area as compared to others being, more equitably treated.
Mr. Chairman, you've hit on an interesting point related to the politics of the issue. Indeed, I think Oregon, the data shows that Oregon does provide medical care in a more efficient manner than that in other states. And some of the other states that are less efficient, also some of the largest states with larger congressional delegations and so forth. Yes. We've made our federal affairs people aware of some of the unique circumstances here in Oregon. And in part, to deal with that, we've suggested different ideas related to improving reimbursement related to quality improvement measures and so forth. But the fact is, we're a national organization, and we have to address federal policy as a national organization as well. So it puts us in a somewhat difficult position for those of us in the state, in the Oregon State Office, and knowing that we're more efficient. But we're just one of 50 states as well.
I understand. Have you gotten anything back from National as to, with the new administration, whether this, let's say, concept might be expanded to looking at what's more equitable throughout the land and not just geographic, based on geographic representation?
Yeah, we have and continue to have conversations with the new administration. Obviously, health care reform is a priority issue for the administration, and as a part of that, the Medicare program and ways that we can improve that program and make it more efficient are obviously on our agenda as well.
All right, great. Thank you. Any other comments, questions? Gentlemen, thank you for your time. The last person I have signed up is Jim Edge. Mr. Edge, come on up. Is there anyone else who's here today that wanted to give testimony on Senate Bill 516? If you do, please let me know so you can come on up. Mr. Edge, thank you for being patient.
Sure. Good morning, Chair Brzezinski and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Jim Edge. I'm an assistant director in the Department of Human Services with the Division of Medical Assistance Programs. I'm here this morning just to provide some general comments on the bill and to state that we support the intent of the bill, what seems to be the intent of the bill, which is to provide incentives for primary care physicians to practice in underserved areas, and we're certainly very supportive of that that idea. I was pleased to hear Senator Morissette say in his remarks that he sees this as a beginning point. He sees a work group happening, which will put more detail around this, because there were some questions we had about the very brief nature of the bill and what the detail that isn't in the bill right now. We also had some ideas as we looked at this bill about other incentives that might be possible, some health care reform type of incentives, things like incentives around payments, bonuses to primary care providers, tax breaks that might be possible. And again, those are things that might come up in a work group setting, and we'd be happy to participate in that. We had some questions or concerns around the fairly broad nature of the bill as it's currently written. And again, that might be resolved as the work group and further amendments get made to the bill. We raised one of the same questions that's already been raised about the fact that this bill seems to be about Medicare and Medicaid. We wondered if it also would apply to private insurance. We also wondered about the applicability of this bill to services that are not within the benefit package of Medicaid, which is our program. We had a question about the fact that the registration is set up within the Department of Human Services, and we certainly have authority over the Medicaid program, the Oregon Health Plan, but not over Medicare at all, so we weren't quite sure how we would fully administer that. We had a question about the cost of the program. Generally, when we set up incentives to do something with the Oregon Health Plan patients, for the Oregon Health Plan patients, we try to structure it in such a way that we can draw down federal matching funds. And this bill, as currently written, wouldn't allow the drawdown of federal matching funds. It would have to be done entirely with state funds. But that being said, we are supportive of the intent of the bill. We do think it's important to provide incentives for primary care physicians to practice in underserved areas.
Great. Thank you. Questions or comments? Again, thank you for your time. And with that, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on Senate Bill 516. And we're going to go into work sessions. And before we start our work sessions, I want to make certain that the record's clear.
Senator Boquist has asked to be excused. He has been excused from today's meeting, and so he will be shown as excused for the work session votes that we take today because of prior commitments that he had. And with that, what we're going to also put on the record, there are two of the bills that are listed within the work session. Senate Bill 299 will not be worked today because we do not have a fiscal impact statement. And we also will not work Senate Bill 298 because there's apparently a issue or problem with the amendment as it was drafted. So those two are not going to be moved today. They will be rescheduled at a future time. And then again, as I mentioned at the beginning of this hearing, I expect Senate Bill 2236 will be rescheduled as well for a work session. So with that, I'm going to go open up our first work session for today, Senate Bill 220. And Council, if you can advise us as to where we're at.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 220 has a, it's the bill we heard on February 4th from the Attorney General's office. It broadens authority to grant funds from the criminal injuries compensation account. It has a dash two amendment that authorizes the Attorney General to make grants from any state or federal grant relating to serving victims of violent crimes, property crimes, and crimes involving fraud and deception. We have no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. And because we have no fiscal impact, I am recommending that the committee ask to rescind the subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee.
All right, so first thing we appear to need to do is go ahead and adopt the dash twos. And so the chair will take a motion on that.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 220.
And Senator Bonamici moves that we adopt the dash two amendments in Senate Bill 220. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And it appears that the next motion would be one with a recommendation for the bill and also a recommendation that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be removed.
Is that one motion?
That can be one.
All right. I move that we send to Senate Bill 220 as amended by the dash two amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation and with a recommendation that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be removed.
Senator Bonamici has moved that we move Senate Bill 220 as amended by the dash two amendments with a due pass recommendation and also request from the President's office a removal of the current subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And on that one there, I'm going to go ahead and ask Senator Dingfelder if you will be our carrier if it does go directly to the floor.
Sorry.
Do you want to wait for a second? Did you want to wait for a second? I understand there may be something else.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Sorry, so okay. We're doing two things at once.
Right.
Senator Dingfelder will be our carrier for that bill. I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing, the work session on Senate Bill 220. My understanding is that regarding Senate Bill 299, that there may be 298, some testimony that needs to be put on the record regarding the possible problem with the amendment. If is that the case? All right, then you're just sit tight. We'll get through these others, and I'll take that that information. So I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session on Senate Bill 371. And Council.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 371 was from the Oregon State Bar Estate Planning Section. It revised the Uniform Trust Code. We heard it on February 5th. It has no revenue impact and no fiscal impact and no amendment. We didn't move it last time it was on the agenda because we didn't have the revenue statement, and we have it now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. And so the Chair will entertain a motion on Senate Bill 371.
Mr. Chair, I move that we send Senate Bill 371 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Bonamici moves Senate Bill 371 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
I just wanted to make a point. There was a discussion when we heard this bill previously about whether the fee that's on page 6 is a new fee, and apparently Senator Witzit clarified with the bar that it's not a new fee. It's just moved from a different part of the statute, so I just wanted to get that on the record.
All right. Any other comments? Any objection to the motion? Not hearing or seeing any. So ordered.
and I will entertain a carrier for this bill. Senator Wissett will be our carrier on 371. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 371. I will open a work session on Senate Bill 239.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 239 was from the Oregon State Bar Debtor-Creditor section. It requires the trustee to record affidavits of mailing and service given to grantor required in a foreclosure, adds a time limit for grantor to assert the notice was not given, declares emergency effective on passage. It has a -4 amendment, which increased the time for the grantor to inform that the notice was not given from 30 days to 60 days, and it changes a reference in the statute. This has... as I said, -4 amendment has no revenue impact or fiscal impact. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, thank you. And the Chair would entertain a motion regarding the -4 amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move that we adopt the -4 amendment to Senate Bill 239.
Senator Bonamici moves the -4 amendment be adopted into Senate Bill 239. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And...
Do you want, are you? I thought you were saying something.
No. I just was.
You're waiting for the motion. I move Senate Bill 239 is amended with the -4 amendment to the floor with the DuPass recommendation.
I was looking for cover. Actually, I was going to move it without actually having the vote. So thank you for the motion. Senate Bill 239 as amended has been moved to the floor with the DuPass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. And Senator Bonamici, would you carry this one for us?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will.
And we'll close that work session on Senate Bill 239, and we'll open up a work session on 277.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 277, we heard on February 24th, it requires a place of public accommodation to allow a customer with an eligible medical condition to use a toilet facility under certain conditions. We had a -1 amendment that requires as a requirement for a person to show a card from either a doctor or a national organization indicating that person suffers from that eligible condition. So that's the -1 amendment. There is no revenue impact and no fiscal impact on the -1 amendment. We just got that this morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move that. Are you ready?
Yes.
That we adopt the -1 amendment to Senate Bill 277.
Senator Bonamici moves the -1 amendment for Senate Bill 271 be adopted.
277.
Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 277 as amended with the -1 amendment to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Bonamici moves the Senate Bill 277 as amended by the -1 amendments to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Now, the Chair will carry this one based on just the workload unless someone else had this. I was looking at my notes to see if any one of us had, this was not one of our bills that we introduced. I know it came through the Judiciary Interim Committee.
The Representative Olson's office.
Okay, so I'll carry it on the Senate side. And we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 277. And I'm going to go ahead and open up a work session regarding Senate Bill 298 for the purpose of hearing comment regarding a possible problem with the amendment. So,
299 doesn't have it.
Why don't you come on up?
Chair Kuczynski, members of the committee, I'm Sharon Harmon, Executive Director of the Oregon Humane Society. I guess I should have followed my parents' advice and gone to law school instead of running an animal shelter because I'm really confused by a couple of things in these amendments. In the -1 amendments for Senate Bill 298, on line 6, the phrase provide reasonable care to the animal. I'm not aware what reasonable care is. I would love to explore it. I'd love to enhance the standard of minimum care, which is in the statute. But I appreciate Legislative Council's attempt to take an awkward phrase at Senator Whitsitt's direction and make it into something better. But I don't know what reasonable care is. If someone could provide me direction. Minimum care keeps everything in alignment with existing statute. I'd love to explore what reasonable care is. I don't know what it is. So in enforcing the law, I'm not sure how we would use that.
All right. We're going to first let counsel respond, and then I'm going to ask Senator Wissett for his comments.
Just in case it helps clarify anything, reasonable care is not defined in the statute that we could find. However, a court is probably used to using the reasonable care standard. It's something that's pretty common in the law. It's subjective, though. So, it depends on the case. And it's not a legislative guidance like we had for minimum care. So it's kind of up to the committee how you would like to go in that direction, I believe.
Senator Wissett?
I think reasonable care is a slippery slope that we just don't want to go to at all.
Okay. So
that is so subjective that you could be criminalized for almost anything.
Okay. I'll just follow up with the counsel. Said reasonable care or reasonableness is a standard that courts do normally use, and it's based on what a reasonable person would do in that same situation. That's normally how the courts would interpret it, and they would look at the specific facts in a particular situation that's brought by the case as to whether or not they felt that that was reasonable under the totality of circumstances that occurred in that event. So that's where we're at. And based on Senator Wissett's having some issues with this, we are not going to work the bill today. And I guess what we can do is see whether or not some modifications can be made to the point of where the committee as a whole is ready to at least have a vote. And knowing that Senator Boquist is not here today, I'm not ready to move the bill at this point. All right. Is there any other comments or statements that we need to put on the record? If not, I'll go ahead and close the work session on Senate Bill 298. And colleagues, I want to give everyone this takes care of the work that we have for today. We're scheduled to be here on Monday. I believe our start time is 8:45.
I thought you were changing the meeting to the afternoon.
No, I'm anticipating, unfortunately. But I do want to let everyone know that I do anticipate that we will be having a meeting next Friday, a week from tomorrow. And that I do, if you'll give me a second. That will be March 20th, and I believe that we'll be starting probably at 7:30 in the morning, a.m., to accommodate with the work that we need to do and make certain that Senator Wissett can take care of his normal duties of being a member of the full Ways and Means that normally starts around 8:30.
March 20th?
March 20th, a week from tomorrow, Friday. It will be our first Friday meeting. Now, I also understand from speaking to the President's office that the Senate will be in session because we will not be here on Monday, March 23rd, and because under the Senate rules, we do need to meet and by every third day, and that's why I believe we'll be on the floor on the 20th. All right, is there any other comments?
Did you say 7:30 to 8:30?
Well, when I said 7:30 and that we will need to make certain Senator Wissett has the ability to get to his other meeting, we may be doing public hearings, so we may continue our part if, depending on how things are going, and we may possibly recess and come back sometime during the day, understanding that the chair is realizes that is the weekend that people will be more than likely going back to their district, since it will be a district day on Monday, and my plan would be not to be having a continuation into the afternoon, but completing sometime in the late morning if necessary.
Mr. Chair, I have meetings set up for that day, so as soon as you know the schedule, if you can let me know.
We will. Okay. That's why I'm giving notice now. All right. Thank you very much. That will be closed, adjourned until Monday morning, 8:45.